application in extended scalar models as a Large Hadron Collider. And this is really a signature-driven search, so I'm going to take a bottom-up approach. And this work is, so it's basically, I have two parts. And one part is based on a paper I did with a few people at IPMU. So Chuanren Chen was is our postdoc there, and Clem and Rantana, I mean, they are both students at Berkeley, so they are visiting students at IPMU. And another part is on triplet Higgs's. That's the work I did with Guiyu and Tao Han at Madison. So, as I said, we want to take a phenomenology approach, and so what I'm going to do is first try to argue our motivation from just from a new signature, and then I'm going to talk about the two signatures at the collider. One is you have a color sextet scalar decays into a Samsung diquark state. And the second example is going to be a doubly charged Higgs decays into a Samsung dileptic. And after that, I'll try to discuss how to accommodate these signatures in the theoretical models, and going to show the example as like color sextet scalar can arise from a Patti-Salam model, and the doubly charged Higgs, they are naturally in the type 2 seesaw or Z-Babu models for neutrino mass generation. But one might have to tune the model a little bit, because in both models, the scalars they're talking about is typically at intermediate scale. It's hard to access that at Large Hadron Collider, and we have to argue a little, you know, we have to put in more effort, try to argue how, you know, you can test that at the electric scale, and you might have to tune your parameter a little bit. Okay, so we know I give this number for a 14 TeV Large Hadron Collider, but I think now they try to have initial running for 10 TeV for a few years. But anyhow, you can scale the production rate down a little bit. And so we know the total cross-section of STAT model at LHC is about 10 to 11 picobar. And BB bar is something like 10 to 7 picobar. And we have TD bar is 800. And single W goes to electron plus neutrino is 10 to 4 picobar. And Z goes to E plus E minus is something like 1,000 picobar. And so there are some very easy channels for beyond STAT model signatures. For instance, you could have Z prime decays to dileptic pairs, and or you might have say a black hole when you have a TeV scale quantum gravity, or you have ice model. And these two, they give a very unique signature. But I want to comment a little bit on this. So for the Z prime to dielectron channel, the question is, what can the like deep inelastic experiment tell us at this moment? Because that's exactly the same diagram. You just have to turn that around, and then you can get some, you know, what's the current bound from there. And for the black hole business, I mean, the signatures are mostly because the entropy of the black hole grows as is proportional to the mass, and when you have a heavy black hole, and it typically decays to multi-hard object. So the kinematics is very different from what we had as for the for other resonance. And you might throw in like a baryon number violation or lepton number violation, those kind of exotic signature into black hole, because usually we don't expect quantum gravity effects like a black hole respect this global symmetries in the STAT model. But the thing is, if you throw in baryon number violation or lepton number violation, then you have to be very careful with, you know, not to produce very dangerous proton decay or something. So typically in that case, you have to introduce some parity, baryon parity.
Can you you explain the connection between deep inelastic scattering and C prime to LL?
Oh, I'm just saying it's the same, right? It's the same diagram. You can have a yeah. It's the same diagram. So you can get some bump from like a Z prime contribution to DIS.
Yeah.
So you can get bump from there. Yeah. So that's
okay.
Simple.
So you're going to tell us about that?
Oh no. This is just my simple argument for
okay.
easy identifiable DSM signature.
But
okay.
there are I didn't know that, but there are bounds from DIS?
I don't know that has been done yet or not. So that's just kind of
okay.
This is just example for some signatures. Okay. Because I'm gonna talk about different signatures. Okay, and the third easy signature, I think, is this Samsung dilapton. What I'm trying to put here is multi-jet plus Samsung dilapton plus large missing ET. Because we know step model contributes to huge background, you know, for multi-jet or jet plus W, jet plus Z, or TD bar, or TD bar plus jet, right? So, but to get Samsung dilapton, that's... we don't expect that many step model background. I mean, I only list the irreducible background here. I mean, typically you also have reducible background coming from protein and that kind of things. But irreducible is typically, the leading ones are things like the TD bar W or jet plus Samsung W. So we have many proposals, you know, try to use this Samsung dilapton channels to search new physics, for instance, supersymmetry, where you can have Guino as a Majorana fermion, and then it's going to decay into multi-jet plus Samsung Chargino, and you might also have Samsung Squark pair, that's you also have a Guino in the T-channel. And in the extra dimension scenario, you could have a KK gluon that decays into multi-jet plus Samsung W prime. I mean, there you don't have any fermion flow, it's just a vector, right? It's then, when you have fourth generation, for instance, you can get psi B prime and the B prime bar, and you can get TD bar plus W pairs. And in principle, when the top decay, then you will expect signature from for the Samsung dilapton plus multi-jet plus missing. And in principle, if you have octet, color octet, that's very common in composite models. And then when you produce the octet pair, then you might expect multi-top events. And that, again, can contribute to multi-jet plus Samsung W. Okay? So the question we want to ask here is, what else? You know, it might contribute to exactly the same final state and at a comparable rate. But if you look at all these examples, they have similar kinematics. So you do similar reconstruction. But the example I'm going to present here is the same final state at a comparable rate, but with a different reconstruction method. And so...
Can I just ask you?
Yep.
This is a very interesting signature that you're talking about here, and I was wondering, did this final state motivate you, or did your model motivate the final state?
I think in my case, it's the final state motivated me, yeah. And well, I guess in general, it's like this.
Can I just ask you how you got that final state?
I'm going to talk about this. Yeah. Okay. See.
Well, I have to leave early.
It's a color... it's a color sextet. So we produce color sextet scalar in pairs, so 6-6 bar from QCD. So the production rate is at comparable, I mean, it's like color exotic, so the rate is huge. And then the sextet can decay into TT and the T bar final state. So if you let, say, TT purely leptonic decay, then you have Samsung dilapton from one side, from one of the sextet. And you have the 6 bar side decay hadronic. You got more
DJ. You were motivated by theory, not experimental results. I guess I'm trying to find out.
Well, the motivation, I think, I mean, it's the color exotic, and it has a very unique decay.
Okay.
So that's fair enough to study this, I think, right? Okay, so that's basically a signature, and I mean, that's half of my talk already. But before that, I just want to argue a little bit. I'm not doing something crazy here for background number violation or lack of number violation, so just want to summarize, you know, what is in the STAT model. So if you look at the U1 symmetries in the STAT model, and so here I try to include both gauge symmetry and the global symmetries, but the condition I list here is for U1 gauge symmetries. And if you work out, you know, the anomaly-free conditions just by plus the Nicola coupling has to be invariant under that U1, and you solve for this U1 charge, then you would see there is only one solution, and that is U1 hypercharge. So basically the conclusion is there is no extra unbroken U1 gauge symmetry except the U1 hypercharge. And even for U1 hypercharge, you don't really get the overall normalization. So you get, so you still cannot tell, I mean, hypercharge is the one tell what the why we have an electron charge is 1 and why the quark charge is fractional, right? So that's all coming from hypercharge. But you still don't have a normalization. And to get a hypercharge normalization, you have to introduce new physics like a grand unification or partial unification. And so the one I listed here, the anomaly-free conditions are for one, I assume there is no Flapper symmetry. But if you introduce Flapper symmetry, then you might have extra degree of freedom, and you expect to gauge the Flapper symmetry, things like LE minus L mu, and or L mu minus L tau. I mean, you can do all this kind of combination. And recently, people try to use this gauge the lepton Flapper symmetry to explain the Pamela kind of signature. And B minus L can be gauged by introduce one extra singlet. So a right-hand neutrino can cancel the anomaly. Well, actually for B minus L, because they don't have any mixed anomaly with STAT model charge, the only anomaly from B minus L are the trace. That corresponds to the gravitational anomaly. So you can easily introduce one singlet to gauge that. However, there's one U1 symmetry left over, that is the B plus L. And this is known as fermion number in the STAT model. And you still have a mixed SU2 anomaly there, so it's going to be a global symmetry. And if it's a global symmetry, then in principle it can be violated by SU2 instanton within the STAT model, or you could have quantum gravity violation. So now let's take a look at baryon number violation or lepton number violation, what has been done here. So in STAT model, we can write down STAT model gauge invariant, but non-renormalizable operators that violates baryon number or lepton number or violates both at the same time. You have, for instance, you can write down a dimension 6 operator that violates baryon number by 1 unit and the lepton number by 1 unit. That will lead to a proton decay. Or you can write down the baryon number violation is equal to 2 or lepton number violation is equal to 2. And you can actually write down two operators. This the lepton number violation operator is going to lead to neutrino mass, and the baryon number violation operator is going to lead to neutron anti-neutron oscillation. And in principle, you could also have delta V is equal to 3 or delta L is equal to 3 in the STAT model, and that's the things you have those non-perturbative effects induced. But this is going to introduce a very, you know, high dimensional operator, and is highly suppressed. And so, yeah. No, not neutron, anti-neutron.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's a baryon number violation. It's a neutron, anti-neutron oscillation. Yeah. And there have been a proposal talking about to test baryon number violation. violation or lack of number violation in the Bjornstam model physics as the collider. So for instance, you could have operative violation in supersymmetry, and well, this one has a very strong bond coming from like a proton decay, that kind of things, and it's the coupling is highly suppressed. And also, well, this no B-mass cell comment here is if you have a gauged B-mass cell, then you might have R parity as part of the B-mass cell symmetry, and there then you don't really expect R parity violation there. It's because it's a discrete gauged R parity. Okay, and people have been, well, there are attempts doing Majorana neutrino as the Large Hadron Collider. So, but in that case, in order to get the small neutrino mass, you really have to tune the dimensionless Yukawa coupling to get the right neutrino mass. And because in the type 1 seesaw, your neutrino mass has to be at close to gut scale to get the right neutrino mass. That's where you have all the 1 Yukawa coupling. But if you lower your right-hand neutrino to electric scale, you know, and then you really have to tune the Yukawa coupling. And in that case, also you have a very tiny mixing between the light neutrino with this new Majorana neutrino, so the production is highly suppressed. Typically, the mixing, well, the bond for the mixing is something like a 10 to negative 4 or something at this moment. You have that from lab, and I think Tabatron also did this search. So the one I'm going to talk about is that's the third case. Is in the extended scalar models, or just in summary, what we want to search is this one, is the when you have a spinner, so phi is, psi is a spinner, so it's a psi conjugate bar, psi couples to a scalar. So that's the coupling we want to search. And typically when you have a fermion-fermion scalar coupling, it's phi bar, psi bar psi phi, right? That gives you, that one is proportional, typically proportional to the mass, because it's in the STAT model, it's a covering action. However, in this term is also a Lorentz invariant, and but it's not a covering action here, it's actually, it couples to the same color states. So it's either purely left-handed or purely right-handed, couples to the scalar. And that's the model we are going to talk about here. And the nice feature for this kind of model is you can produce these scalars through gauge interaction, and then the electron number violation or baryon number violation only occurs in the decay. So you can have a huge production rate, but then you look for the violation in the decay. Okay, but in the second case, where the production actually is highly suppressed. Okay. So that's a nice feature for the third case, why you want to do the in the scalar models. So this is the first example, and what I want to do here is really take a bottom-up setup, just to throw in color sextet object in the STAT model, and then try to see, you know, what is the gauge invariant copying of this color sextet, and then you can discuss its phenomenology. So, as I said, this coupling is the psi conjugate bar psi coupled, and then phi. So it really couples to the same color states. And then that means your scatter can only be either SU2 triplet, or it's a SU2 singlet. So if it's a triplet, that's what I call delta here. So if it's a triplet, then you would expect it couples to the doublet, so the like a Q. So you have a Q transpose C inverse times the triplet, and then there's a Q. So this is purely left-handed. Or you can also have the color sextet being the SU2 singlet. And in that case, you would have, but you actually have three different possibilities. You have the one only couples to the up type, or the one only couples to the down type quarks, or the one you can also have that mix the down type and the up type quarks. And what we are going to focus on is the color sextet only couples to the right-handed up type quark, because the thing is, it's hard to distinguish the quark sign for the light generations, right? But if you have a top quark, and then you can use the top decay, leptonic decay, to tell the sign. And we don't want to do the left-handed, because I'm going to talk about that actually. The sextet is actually it's a Jim violation object. So when you do a left-handed, then you might run into trouble with the flavor physics. But I'm going to talk about that. Okay. So so this one is a QCD object. So it's going to be it can be produced just from gluon-gluon fusion or QQ-bar annihilation. And because it's a sextet, so the production rate is huge. You can see, I mean, it's you compare the sextet with the triplet, it's like one order higher. And so that's you typically expect, say, 1 TeV for the sextet, you can get something like a few hundred femtobar production rate, because it's color exotic. So the production rate is huge. I have a few remarks on the production. Just try to do a comparison between the sextet and an octet object. Scalar octet, I really mean something like a gluon, that kind of thing. So the thing is, for sextet, you cannot produce that through. We don't have a single production from the glu or QQ bar. And you can produce that through, if the sextet couples to the first generation, say U quark, then you can do a UU fusion, produce a single sextet. And but that production is really, I mean, it's model dependent, because that's really dependent on the copying. It's not a gauge copying here. However, if you look at the pair production is really, it's a QCD production. It's through strong interaction. The simple group theory here is let me just write it down, yeah, in case. So it's a 6 times 6 bar is something like 27 plus 8 plus 1. So there is one couples to you have a gluon couples to 6 bar. So that's the production we are looking at. And this kind of sextet object, if you have a copying to first generation and a second generation, for instance, to the U quark and Chom quark, then you will have problem with DD bar mixing, because if you think of DD bar mixing, where you do a UC bar goes to U bar C, and the sextet can contribute at the tree level. So that's typically a problem. And if you have a sextet at a few hundred GeV, then, and if the copying is huge, then you really expect a large bar, you know, DD bar mixing there. So that's something we want to avoid. So in this talk, what I'm going to do is I want to assume the color sextet dominant decay into third generation. Okay. But actually, this copying is somewhat arbitrary here, because as I said, this psi conjugate bar psi, it doesn't, I mean, it's not like the Curry interaction, the Yukawa interaction, where you always have the coupling is proportional to the mass. But here it's not. So it doesn't have to be natural to say a couple to the top quark is more natural than, you know, the coupling to the first two generations is small, because it has nothing to do with top quark mass. Okay. And if you want to generate a mass term from this kind of coupling, you can only write down a Majorana mass. So that will apply to neutrino. Okay, that's for the Lapin number violation case I'm gonna talk about. The second problem here is, as I said, this one is going to it's a Jim violation object. But fortunately, what we want to do here is we want the color space that only couples to the right-handed states. So in that case, because you don't really know the right-handed rotation, I mean, we cannot measure the right-handed rotation, so it's kind of arbitrary there. But if you have it coupled to the left-handed rotation, then even you argue, say, you turn off the charm coupling here, but when you do the rotation, it might bring back the coupling, so you will have a flavor violation from there. And the third comment I want to add here is, so six patch really arises from here. So it's a 3 times 3, it gives you a 6 plus 3 bar. So you might ask what happened to the 3 bar, right? Whether you can have a scalar 3 bar object. And sure, I mean, that is actually the spark when you have R priority violation. You can write down UCDCDC, but then you replace one of them as spark. But it's different from, I mean, because in our case, we try to argue it's a QCD production. I mean, you have a pair produced a six-pad object, and then it decays to die quark. But in this case, well, you can also do that when you have spark pair production and you turn on R-priority violation. But you see, you can never get the one decays to sam sign top. Okay. So that's the thing. And so this is what we are looking for. We have a 6 bar pair production from QCD. Well, in principle, you can also have electrical production, but that rate is small. I mean, it's charged under, it has, at least it has it has electric charge, right? So you can produce that from dry end kind of things. But that rate is much smaller than the QCD, so we only focus on the QCD production. And so basically in this plot, I didn't include, this is purely QCD production. And the six hat decays to the top pair final state. So you will expect a 4 top final state. And then what we want is we want the sam sign top decay purely leptonically. Then you have you will expect your multi-bjet plus sam sign dilepton plus missing ET coming from the neutrino associated with the W decay and plus other jet. Well, in principle, you could have W jet, or you might have radiation jet. And well, in our paper, we didn't really do. We only did a very preliminary study, and we didn't turn on the radiation, which is kind of unreal. But just want to argue, you know, this is so. In this case, your sam sign dilepton really coming from one resonance. It's very different from, say, Greenlow pair, where the sam sign dilepton coming from the both sides, right? So,
you're talking about initial and final state and want radiation.
What
radiation are you thinking?
Yeah, the initial state and the final state. We haven't. Yeah, in our study we didn't put that in. Yeah, but in principle, I mean, you will have. You can do. I think in PCL you have a. They have a die quark there. I mean, which is exactly the same object. So you can put in a diquark, turn on the radiation, just try to see what's the shower from the diquark state. Yeah, in principle, that can be done, but we didn't do that. What we try to do is to propose a new signature and a different reconstruction. I mean, because it's the same signature. I mean, I know experimentalists, they're going to trigger on that anyway, right? It's a standard SUSY search. So, well, here's a few distributions just to try to show, I mean, we can do at least, it proves what we have done is right. I mean, you get what we expected. So when you look at, say, multi-jet, the purely hadronic decay for one side, and then you can do W reconstruction from the jet and the top reconstruction. I know it's kind of unreal without radiation, but just want to show it. You can do that. And if you when you have a purely hadronic top, and then you can do the top momentum with the reconstructed six-tet momentum, the angular correlation, and you see without part, it's a scalar. And in principle, you can look for the resonance from say the purely the hadronic side, then you have a multi-jet resonance. And for the leptonic decay, I mean, where you have a 2-jet plus Samson dielectron plus missing T, you can construct something like a transverse mass or something. You get a transverse mass variable. So here I just want to show it's a 600 GeV 6-tab. Okay, because one side is purely hadronic and another side is purely leptonic. Okay. And you can, so that's the discovery for the resonance. And then we put in some standard, some basic card for the jet PT and missing T. I don't remember the number, but it's in our paper. Okay, and then it, so you get the number is, this is the number we got. Well, with the right decay branching, you have two W leptonic and the two W hadronic. You multiply all this decay branching there. And but this one, we actually normalize the with this six pack goes to the top at this moment. We didn't assume anything, what is the branching is. And so this plot, what we're trying to show here is we take into account the multi-jet plus sensine W and the TD by W background. I mean, there is no reducible background because we don't have that, the tool. We just did some very preliminary Hadron level plus smearing kind of simulation. And the trial value, that's the background. And for the sensine dielectron plus multi-jet plus CT. And then if you have, and then we take the decay branching, the 6-tab goes to TT as a free parameter, try to see, you know, what is the coverage. So for having inverse phantom by luminosity, you can cover up to something like a PEV, the pair produced out of 6-tab. Any question? No? No? It's all clear? Okay, good. So, okay, now let me move to the lepton number violation part. So, for the lepton number violation, what I want to do here is, again, I mean, to look for that copying, and then to see, so you can introduce two kind of scalars. One is, it could be a SU2 adjoint, so it's a 3 on the SU2, and the hypercharge is 1, or you could have SU2 singlet, and then the hypercharge is -2. So in that case, you could have a triplet couples to the lepton doublet, LL, okay, and they are both left-handed. And you could also have a singlet couples to the same sign right-handed lepton space, okay? And then you can discuss its phenomenology. Size you can produce. Well, here it's a slightly different for, it's a weak interaction production, so it's slightly different for the singlet and the triplet case, because for the singlet, you don't expect a single W production. They only have, I mean, through the Drevian kind of things. So for the triplet case, you can do things like produce doubly charged plus singly charged, that's through W, or you can do doubly charged pair, or singly charged pair, or singly charged plus neutral. Okay, and for the singlet scatter, there you can only do doubly charged pair or singly charged pair. Okay. Yeah.
Do you have constraints from just lepton flavor violation on this model? And if these quantities are big enough,
sure.
Produced, I would think that there would also be.
Yeah, it's going to change size, hard decay, and all the things. Yeah. You might have psi muon goes to 3 electron. We did.
Do you really have these large cross sections this large without it being ruled out?
Oh, no. The cross section here, it's. So that depends on. That kind of thing depends on your current topic. And I'm going to talk about that. And. In principle, for the triplet scalar, you can produce that through WW fusion or associative production as well. But the problem is here is the company between the triplet hits with the W is proportional to the triplet wave. And so here is exactly the same. I mean, also proportional to the triplet wave. So that's kind of it's model dependent. However, the one we talk about here, those productions are through just gauge interaction. Okay, so that's kind of model independent production. And in principle, you can also produce this triplet Higgs pair from weak boson fusion, and but that rate is, you know, is very small. There are two reasons. One is you naturally expect there are forward phase space, there are phase space suppression, but the even more serious problem is there you expect a large cancellation among the diagrams here. So it's so the rate is highly suppressed for the weak boson fusion. Yeah. And I want to add one comment is just for the doubly charged Higgs. It's because it's doubly charged, so the if you just look at the real photon emission, I mean, I'm really talking about the collinear photon. So the real photon emission produced a doubly charged Higgs pair. And in that case, because it's doubly charged, so each vertex, I mean, just for QED production, each vertex is, I mean, the vertex is twice, right? And then the matrix element is four times, and then you square that, you get 16 times enhancement compared with the singly charged Higgs production. And so we did this, and well, here you really have to sum over, you know, three different cases when you have, say, photon is radiated from a proton directly, or photon is radiated from the quark, or you can have both. That's what we call semi-elastic. So the elastic, purely elastic one is you're talking about proton-proton and then radiated real photon, and then it's but the proton is really, it's in the beam direction, so you don't really measure the jet. It's not a weak boson fusion, so the jet is not going to get kicked here. Here is really the beam. I mean, so you don't see the additional jet in the beam direction here. And it's the way you do it is this has been studied before in '94 by Menegrius and Rohini, and so they have some fitting photon structure function kind of things. So they did that. We actually used that result, and what we found is this real photon emission is about 10 times the drill yen for a few hundred GeV doubly charged Higgs, and that is at a comparable rate with the QCD radiation. Okay, so that's just because it's doubly charged. Okay, so then let's look at this doubly charged Higgs decays into the lepton number violation decay of this the triplet Higgses. Well, as I said, this triplet Higgs can actually decay into some sign W or WZ. The singly charged is going to decay to WZ. And but if you but that one is proportional to the triplet wave, and if your triplet wave is small, then you would expect the dominant decay is the leptonic decay, and so the doubly charged Higgs decays to same sign and lepton, and the singly charged Higgs decays to lepton plus. So it's really L plus and anti-neutrino. So this vertex is a lepton number violation vertex. However, because neutrino is invisible, you don't really see that lepton number violation effect. You cannot tell neutrino from anti-neutrino. And the neutral one goes to neutrino. And so it's going to be invisible here. And for the collider search, the problem is this the neutral one is just invisible in this lepton decay limit. And the neutral one is always produced associated with a singly charged one. And also, well, at the same time, you know this singly charged one is going to be attached to lepton plus neutrino. So for this final state, you only see one lepton and three neutrinos. So it's impossible to do reconstruction. So we don't really do this channel for the neutral. But what we try to search here is to do H plus plus, H minus, so that's W, and to produce three lepton and plus neutrino, or you have a four lepton channel from W charged Higgs pair from like L plus plus, L minus minus. And well, I try to, so for experiments, we know this. Electron muon, that's what we call lepton in the collider environment. But tau is slightly different because of tau decay, so you have to treat it a different way. And for the standard background in this case, I mean, it's very, it's actually very clean channel because you are looking at a lepton number violation of this resonance decay, and you really look at same sign dilepton resonance. And while the multi-lepton channels from the multi-lepton final states in the stat model are mostly coming from like a Z or a W, and you can easily get rid of them by doing a veto. Say, for instance, you can veto for four lepton case, you can veto the opposite sign dilepton invariant mass is around Z, then you just veto that event. And the things left over is going to be then you can look for the same sign dilepton resonance after this veto. And the trilepton channel, there you have like a WZ or W photon goes to trilepton or 3W. And they can be suppressed by, you know, well, first you can do a Z veto, and you can also impose something like the transverse mass to get rid of the W. So here I just want to show the So this is for the trilepton channel, and you see the different level of backgrounds. So at the very end, when you impose something like a transverse mass cut, then you can get, I think it's somewhere here. So that's the final cut, and you still have signal is above that. The transverse mass has to be greater than 200 GeV, I think. The WZ is suppressed to less than a femtobar. And for the reconstruction, here you look for the same sign dilepton resonance. It's very clean, and the resolution is generally pretty good when you look for the lepton final state, and it's much better than the one I showed there, because that the six pack there you have multi jet, and the other sign lepton, this is for the trilepton channel. Then you can combine that with the missing ET measurement and do a transverse mass, and that's what you got. And for the tau, so here it's a for the tau decay, I mean, tau can have leptonic decay, or it can also have hadronic decay. But the question you might ask is, what if tau leptonic decay, it's comes in, and say when you have a singly charged Higgs goes to tau nu, and then it decays to lepton plus missing ET, and how to distinguish this kind of decay from charge it goes to lepton plus neutrino directly. And what we propose here is to just use lepton PT to do that, because for tau, I mean, tau three body decays to lepton plus two neutrino, and that's typically is very soft. And we want to argue, I mean, here the lepton from the charge Higgs, because it's from a heavy resonance, so it's much harder than the tau lepton. And you can impose something like, so what we try to do here is if PT is less than a certain value, then we call that is a hot laptop. I mean, if PT is greater than we call it, it's a laptop from the charge hicks. And we did the simulation with the laptop misidentification rate and the power survival probability. So, for instance, for a 300 GeV hicks, then you can put a PT like a 100 GeV cut, or for the 600 GeV hicks, then you can do something like a 200 GeV PT selection. Here for the tau reconstruction is going to be, I mean, it's exactly the same story as Higgs to tau tau search. Because, I mean, basically, it's when you have a highly boosted tau, and then you can assume the missing part is collinear with the charge track direction, and each tau is corresponding to one unknown, so you assume this. The P invisible momentum is equal to the charge track direction. It's proportional to that. And then you can determine this number by, first of all, you have to match the missing PT measured in that system, and that gives you two independent equations. And if you look for, tau in the H plus plus H minus minus channel, then you can get so you can assume the reconstructed Higgs, right? They should have the H plus plus and H minus minus. They should have the same amounts. So that can be another equation to put in. And so in principle, you can solve for up to three tau's for reconstruction. And here I just want to show the kinematics. For Higgs to mu mu, and so double charge Higgs to mu plus, and the double charge Higgs to tau plus tau plus, and you see the tau, simulated using reconstructed by this collinear approximation, and here I show the coverage for
it remains under constraint by one thing, right?
What?
The masses. I don't understand.
The masses of what?
If you go back the slide, you have four unknowns and then three equations. And one remaining.
Not four unknowns. So what I claim here is you can reconstruct it three times. So you would expect the other one is actually, so this is really for mu tau tau tau.
It's not
a four tau. Yeah, you cannot do four tau. I mean, that's what I said here. You can only do three tau finals.
Sure.
Yeah. So, okay. And so that's the phenomenology part. Okay, just the signature for the color sextet scalar and the triplet Higgs. And then let's see what kind of theory can give you such kind of signature. And for color sextet scalar, it's actually naturally in this Patti-Salam model when you break the SU4 color, where you have this a 10 on the SU4, and that one has a sextet under SU3 color. And the problem is really why this sextet scalar is that a few hundred GeV scale instead of at a high scale, because this kind of so in Patti-Salam model there, if you look at the sextet I introduced here, they are charged, right? So you certainly don't want them to get any wave. However, when you try to unify that at the Patti-Salam model level, in that limit, then you would have a neutral one, and that one in principle can get a wave. And so it's going to generate neutral anti-neutron oscillation, so you have a lot of constraint coming from there. And but there is a model proposed about 10 years ago. It's a supersymmetric Patti-Salam model. It's done by Chaco and Mahabhatra. And there they have so in their model, they can lower the color sextet to to a few hundred GeV scale and still keep it consistent with neutron anti-neutron oscillation and that kind of constraint. Okay, and people have been using this for like electric baryon genesis, or they call it post-spiron effects. There are some activity going on, you know, doing this lower the light kind of six-tech scatter. And for the triplet Higgses, or the, well, not only the triplet, but also the singlet Higgses, that decays to sometimes dilapton. And if it's a singlet, then you can put that Higgs into a so-called Z-Babu model, where they introduce two singlet. One is a doubly charged singlet and a singly charged Higgs. And there you can generate neutrino mass from a two-loop effects. And if it's a triplet, then that's a well-known type 2 seesaw for neutrino mass generation. But again, why the triplet is light, right? Because in the type 2 seesaw, so what happens is, in the type 2 seesaw is you have a triplet coupled to the charge, to the electron doublet, and it also mixes with the Higgs doublet. And so the process of this both terms is going to break the U1 B mass L symmetry. And then the triplet can get a wave is proportional to this mixing term. Okay, and the inverse proportional to the triplet mass squared. So the question is really how generate, you know, if this one is a few hundred GeV, then why the neutrino mass, you can get the right neutrino mass. So you have to tune this. Well, we don't want to tune the Lippard coupling, because if you make the Lippard coupling too small, then you won't get the triplet dominant decay to lepton. That's good, and if it decays to W pairs, it's going to be very hard to define it. And so we want the triplet wave to be very small. And for instance, if the Lippard coupling here is order 0.01, then it requires a mu to be of KeV scale. And the thing is, mu is a dimension one parameter in this model, and if mu vanishes, then it's actually restore the lepton symmetry or U1 Bmax L symmetry. Then you might be able to argue the mu is naturally small, but we really have to tune this mu. And also, the triplet wave is proportional to the mu. And if you look at the triplet here, I mean, the neutral one is going to get a wave. And the problem is, it's going to explicit breaks this SU2 L plus R Castillo symmetry. So it's going to contribute to the Chen Zhou parameter. And so Jack had a paper many years ago talking about, in this case, the Zhou parameter actually requires the triplet wave to be less than 1 GeV. And so the Zhou parameter also prefer a very small mu here. And for the triplet model, I mean, because if you look at this, the decay of the charge Higgs and the neutrino mass, they have a direct correlation. So you might ask, you know, whether you can use the triplet Higgs decay to tell anything about neutrino physics, like the spectrum of a neutrino mass pattern, whether it's a normal hierarchy or inverted hierarchy, or it's a quasi-degenerate, you know, that kind of things. And here we did scattering, actually, we did this. So for the normal hierarchy, you naturally expect the electron is decay gradient is very small, and the tau and the mu, they have a large mixing here because you have a large sine theta to 3. And just for Marcus' question, for this scattering, we have already taken into account, you know, all this like lepton flavor violation or yeah, all this kind of constraint for the WHR takes. Yeah, it's all taken care of. Yeah. And this only allowed that kind of parameter space, and then we put in this global fitting for the neutrino mass spectrum and did this plot. Okay. So that's all taken care of. And for the inverted hierarchy, you expect the electron-electron is going to be dominant decay for the WHR takes. Okay, so but this plus, I mean, you can easily see the connection between the double charge takes decay into same sign dielectron and the neutrino mass pattern. But the assumption is that there is no Majorana phase. And if you include Majorana phase, then it's going to scrap everything because this decay branching, it has a phase dependent there. And what we propose here is to use a singly charged Higgs decay to use that decay branching combined with the doubly charged Higgs decay. And from there, you can actually tell what kind of neutrino spectrum is. And then you can even tell the Majorana phase. Because, so this is a singly charged Higgs decay. You know, so it's phase independent. I mean, it has some similar feature like the double charge phase, but this one is really, it's phase independent. The reason here is really when you do when you look at the double charge Higgs decay, you have this rotation matrix, I mean S matrix, but the decay branching is proportional to this. And for the single charge Higgs decay, so the phase we are talking about here is this. The 5152 for the Majorana phase. So for the singly charged Higgs decay, really you have to sum over all three invisible neutrinos, and then the singly charged Higgs decay, there is no phase dependence here. Okay. So in principle, you can use the triplet Higgs decay, so both doubly charged and the singly charged Higgs. If you can measure their decay branching, and you can use this information to get, you know, what kind of neutrino mass spectrum is, and you can even tell the Majorana phase from there by combining the information. So, for instance, you got this is a feature. I mean, whether it's normal hierarchy or inverted hierarchy. okay. So let me summarize. So we discussed testing the baryon number violation or lepton number violation in extended scalar models with the following two examples. One is the color 6-tet scalar decays into a Samsung diquark. And we make use of the color 6-tet scalar decays to Samsung top to test its 6-tet nature. We are still working on this, but we're close to put it off soon. It's we are using this because it's only coupled to the same Carroll state, so we try to use the angular correlation of the top decay to really confirm this, you know, top correlation for the 6-tet. And for the triplet Higgs case, is so we discussed this SU2 triplet Higgs in type 2 seesaw, and we can use the triplet Higgs decay into lepton states to determine the neutrino mass spectrum, and even in the presence of Majorana phase. Okay, so that's all. Yeah.
Questions.
I have one on the color 6-tet mass limit. You put it strictly, is that strictly above the TD bar threshold, or just for convenience?
Oh, that's just for convenience. And
you said something like a few hundred GeV.
Yeah, we look, in our case, we look for on-shell top. So we start with 400 GeV. And there was a study by Mahabhatra and Okada and the High Board. They had a so they talk about single production just from UU fusion, and they assume the copying there is something like other points. So the six stack couples to UU is at order 0.3, and then the TT copying is also 0.3. It's just the assumption there. And then they try to argue because this single production of six stack can decay to semi-tiny TOF. But if you look at the semi leptonic decay, and it's going to contribute to TT bar sample, and they did get a bound of something like a 400. 50 GeV, something, I think. Yeah.
Any other questions? No, it's then Kai again.